Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Billy Goldfeder, 52 years of combination experience, Deputy Fire Chief with Loveland Sims Fire Department in Ohio, bestseller published author, creator of The Secret List, Firefighter Close Calls, and 40 Plus Fire. Involved with International Association of Fire Chiefs Safety, Health, and Survival, September 11th Families, National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, NIOSH, and so many others. I can go on and on, but there's no doubt Billy loves the fire service. From a young age, once he was exposed, there was no stopping him from being a part of what we all know deep within is the greatest job in the world. I truly hope the listeners enjoy the interview and pick up a few gems Billy drops along the way. With that, I present Billy Goldfeder.
Well, hey, it's a pleasure to be with you, Danny, and glad we were able to carve out some time on this July 4th Eve, following a horrible weekend last weekend with the loss of the two battalion chiefs in Idaho. Lots of chatter there. I don't think anybody disagrees. There was absolutely nothing they could have done. They were ambushed. It was a sniper, and sometimes we just can't help things, but we hope and pray for their families and the organizations, which are going to have a long, long road ahead trying to figure this all out and make some sense of it. So I started as a firefighter in 1973, but where I got my interest, I don't know, man. I mean, I'll give you one story because I've never not been interested, and I'm as gung-ho today as I was in 1973. I'm still the first out the door. Well, at this stage, I have to hit the head first, but then I'm out the door pretty quick. But in the 60s, I grew up in Long Island, the late 50s, and my mom and dad would have a guy come in to wax the floors. There was no such thing as no wax floors back then. So you'd hire someone to come in, and they put paste wax down, and they'd run a machine and wax your floors once a year. And he, his name was Danny, and he would carry his wax machine and equipment back out to his Woody station wagon. I mean, I remember every little detail of this. Okay. And I can see myself right now as a 3 or 4 year old, whatever I was then, looking at him putting this machine in the back of his wagon. By the way, he would let me ride on the machine when he was waxing the floors. Today, no insurance company would let anybody do that. So he puts his machine in the back of this Woody station wagon. And I look, and there's a pair of rubber pull-up boots. There's a black coat, and there's a black helmet. I said, "Danny, what's that for?" He says, "I'm a firefighter." I said, "But you do a waxing of floors." He says, "No, I'm a volunteer firefighter." And from then on, it sparked my interest. He would bring me, as I got older, fire manuals, training documents, and there wasn't a lot back then. Mm-hmm. So he was a firefighter out in Suffolk County, Long Island, and they've always had a really robust county firefighter training program. So he would bring me the manuals, the old ones. I wanted anything he could give me. And that's kind of how it got started. And I really have never had much interest in anything else. I ran through, I was dismissed from public school because I had no interest in anything other than when the fire whistle blows, chasing the fire trucks. So my mom and dad, in their wisdom, sent me away to a private school, hoping to get me refocused. And I immediately joined up when I got there because our dormitory was right next to the station. So it's obsessive. And I think the greatest thrill I have is that we matter. And I don't want to get all dramatic and all that kind of silliness, but we do. And I think sometimes our egos get caught up in it. We could talk about that at some point. But we can say all day long we're here for them, but we have to act like it. We can say all we want. It's more than a sticker. And I've always gotten a thrill of being on call. It never bothered me that we'd be at a dinner or at an event and boom, I gotta go. Just something about that readiness always just really, I loved it because somebody had a problem 5 minutes ago and now they need us, right? So I was in high school and then graduated and was very, I was allowed to leave my classes when the whistle blew, which I loved, again, the readiness part. Then I went, let me turn this, if I'm sorry if these radios a little
Oh, you're fine.
too loud. Went down and there was not a lot of fire programs back then, but Broward Community College in Florida had a program. And my mom and dad had a small condo down in Pompano Beach. So I decided to go live down there after I graduated. And I went and took the 2 year program there. And I worked for the Broward Sheriff's Office, first for patrol, but then dispatch. And then I joined one of the fire departments back then. It was called North Andrews Fire Department. It's now been absorbed into Broward County, but I lived in the firehouse. I don't remember ever sleeping so well than when I lived in the firehouse because I was going to make that first wagon no matter what. There's no arguing. So I just loved it. I still have friends from back then. This is 74, 75, right? I'm still pretty close to a bunch of guys that are, those are still with us. I then moved back to Long Island, went to work for ISO, who evaluates fire departments, did that for 5 years and joined the childhood dream fire department for you was a place called Manhasset Lakeville on Long Island. Five stations, pretty busy, pretty big department, but that's who I chased my whole life as a kid. Went back, worked for ISO, went to Manhasset Lakeville, worked for them, and said, I want to do more. I could not take the FDNY test because of my eyesight. That was my ultimate dream. We didn't have LASIK and stuff back then, so you had limited options. But I saw an ad for a division chief's job in Florida, in Manatee County, Florida. They were looking for somebody to put in their first 911 system. So, because of my ISO experience, I had evaluated several hundred communication centers and I got selected for the job. So, moved down there, and about a week later, one of the fire districts was looking to hire an assistant chief. So I did that nights and weekends, and I worked for the county during the day, and that was pure paradise. That's when we had our kids, my three kids. Then I took another job up in Virginia and was in Virginia for almost 10 years. And that was a big, that was in Loudoun County. That was a big transition time. That's when the volunteers were really starting to, and I hate to use the word fail, but not turn out. And we started to have to hire career people. And that was very, very emotional for a lot of people. We tell people that, we're firefighters through and through and it's in our hearts and all that. Well, that's a good thing. And sometimes that's a bad thing because sometimes that gets in the way of progress. And as much as you may love your volunteer fire company, if you're not getting out, you're not doing the job. And that's really a big problem nationwide right now. You don't have to turn on any scanner to hear it. You're lucky if you get in some places a 7 or 8 minute response where they're out the door. The more progressive volunteer departments are doing duty crews. If you join our volunteer fire department, you are in the firehouse responding. That's the way to do it in 2025. And then I felt like when I was in Virginia, the department was so large, I didn't feel like a firefighter anymore. I felt like an administrator. And most of my time was spent on that stuff. So I had a chance to come out to Ohio. Came out here. I was the first and last chief of what was called the Mason Deerfield Joint Fire District. The two communities got into a fight with each other and they broke up their fire department. So I had a choice and I went to work for Loveland Sims and I've been with them since 2000 and love it. I've got a great boss. People ask, how do I get along with my boss? If you know him, he's a very tough, no nonsense guy, a great guy. Very focused on what's best for the community before anything else. And they ask, how do I get along with him? And I said, I get along with him 95% of the time, and the other 5%, he's right. And I think that's a good way. Sometimes we have to understand that ultimately your boss is going to say no sometimes, or you may not agree. Well, you're not going to get what you want all the time. But we deliver an amazing product. We have the best firefighter paramedics anywhere. And they're into it. And when I, as I told you before you started the show, When I'm with them, I am charged. I've got some great officers, some great. Obviously, there's a significant age difference between me and the troops because of my age. But man, I love those guys and gals, and they are hard charging. They're into it, and we train nonstop every day. Literally, is a training day, and we use a lot of national standards to gauge the way we operate. We're into accreditation. We're an ISO class one. Everyone must have some level of certification in the job they do. So, for example, as a chief, I've got to have either OFE or EFO plus additional credentialing courses. It's not just you suddenly became this or you suddenly become that. So, that's kind of my story. I'm very involved with the IFC. I do a lot of work with the IFF. I'm not a member of the IFF. But I'm very engaged with them. My son happens to be a firefighter. Anything I do for the IFF is for them and for my kid. I run a website. I had some cancer. But otherwise, things I have seven great grandkids, seven great grandchildren. I don't have seven great grandkids. But that's kind of my story. I'm this people who know me my whole life. I've not changed. I wear the same clothes. I look the same. Mustache is gray. Used to be black. The radios are always on, and I'm ready to roll. And it's because these days, all I have to do because of our automatic aid program around here, and that we all work really, really, really well together. It's unbelievable how good we do. A lot of egos have to be set aside, and we focus on what's best. Danny, we're getting 25 to 30 people on a first alarm fire through automatic mutual aid. There's some metro cities aren't putting that many people on the road. And we all work with each other. We all train regularly together, meaning hands-on at the burn tower. So when we go on a first alarm assignment, it's not like we haven't seen these people in a while. We all know each other. And it really, really works well, and it's what's best for the public. So I'll shut up for a minute. That's just an overview of what I've done, and I'm super happy. I love what I do.
Okay. No, it definitely shows. It shows for sure. With that being said, could you tell the listeners, including myself, a little bit about Loveland Sims, the size, how many stations, personnel,
Yeah,
things of that
sure.
nature?
Four stations, about 80 people. We run between 12 and 14, maybe 15 on a shift, depending. We have an on-duty battalion. Each firehouse also has a boss assigned. About 55, 6,000 calls a year, and that includes automatic mutual aid into about seven or eight other communities, and they come to us as well. We're a career department. We have a volunteer aspect called our emergency service unit. It's really like a CERT team on steroids. They respond on first alarm assignments. They do rehab. They can do exterior operations. They've all been trained, but they do nothing to. They don't replace any of our career people. And it's awesome. We're looking at expanding that into actually a regional rehab unit.
Okay.
But we have. Deputy chief or assistant chief in charge of training, assistant chief in charge of operations, assistant chief in charge of EMS. I'm responsible for safety and health, as well as response. It's not a bad place to be.
Okay.
The difference though, and I got to tell you, there's no grass growing under anybody's feet. We're constantly being pushed, and that's our boss. That's Chief Ott Huber. Who, by the way, is being recognized this year at the IFC's FRI for the Alan Bruni Senior Leadership Award, which is really, really cool because Bruno was one of his mentors. But Chief Huber, we're always looking on how we can improve. And sometimes it's exhausting. Sometimes we like to just go, oh, enough already. No, it's not enough. But it reflects when our public has to vote on a tax levy or whatever it is. We see, high 70s of support in the community. But that's because we go out of our way. We have something called our senior med program. Like if your mom and dad, let's say they're in their, elderly or have medical issues, we program them into our system. And we know if we're going to a senior med location, our medics get a file on board through the printout, and it tells us all their medical history. And we have a PediMed program, at-risk pediatric kids in our community. Let's say you've got a child that's got severe medical issues, or just a you want us to know that they have this disease or that. We program that in, and again, we're on our way. We know exactly what we're going to be dealing with. So while we also pre-plan our buildings in our community, we actually pre-plan high-risk people as well. And that's just one of many, many things that we do. And again, I welcome people to come visit anytime to see what we're doing. And it's a sprint. It's nonstop.
No, I love it. I love it. What's your minimum staffing on your apparatuses?
Yeah, so our minimum staffing is three. The tower ladder is four. We can go down to two at one of our stations. And that's we are upstaffing. We are hiring more. We're bringing on more of our council, which we cover both a city and a township. Both understand we want to bring those numbers up. So we do what our local tax base can fund. We normally get what we want, but we don't also waste it. You know, we maintain our own hydrants. We do all the school programs. We do a lot of stuff. So we are. I mean, our tower ladder can have four to five on it today. It can go down to three. And that's pretty typical for our whole region, pretty much. So, you know, we'll put eight or 10 departments on a first alarm assignment if we have to get those 25 or 30 people. And the chiefs respond as well. You know, any of us can command any of the other ones' fires. I can arrive at a fire, you know, down the block here, and I can run it. You know, we've all been certified. We've all been trained. We all work with each other. And the key is the first time we see each other is not on the fire ground. We have relationships, you know, friendships and you know, that confidence that we know who we're dealing with. So, yeah. So our first alarm assignment will include multiple other communities. We just did something called CAD to CAD. Our district sits actually in a piece of three different counties. So all the CAD systems talk to each other. So we know who's available, who's not. It's all automated. If your companies are available, you're getting toned out. If it shows on CAD you're not available, you're not getting toned out. We have common radio system, the Ohio Marks radio system. We can all switch to whatever fire ground we need. It really is something I'm greatly proud of. And I'm proud that I've had a piece of doing some of that, getting that moving forward. I will tell you, when I got here in 95, there was no automatic aid and nobody really talked to each other. It was pretty, and I'm not the only person that fixed it, but I was part of that realizing we need to do better.
Now, Chief, coming up through the service, through the different departments you served, I'm sure you had a mentor or mentors that have made you or that have shaped and molded the person you are today. How important is it for others to find those mentors?
I mean, you're in a dark room. You need somebody with a light to guide you until you get used to it, right? That's kind of the thing. I mean, as a little kid, Dino, giving me those little manuals, learning about the fire service. And then when I became a firefighter, a guy named Lou Caffone, who was our battalion chief, he was retired from New York City, but he worked in Florida. He really got me, and there's a picture of him on my wall right here. He really got me thinking that firefighting is much more than just jumping on a truck and going to fires. He got me a lot more serious about it. I mean, it was a big change for me at that point. And so in Long Island, it was a chief named Eddie Bennett who was a mentor to me. And even today, look, I mean, I was on the phone the other day with a guy's retired deputy chief in New York City, Jimmy Murtaugh. Chief Murtaugh was a legend in the FDNY. I got to teach with him at FDIC for many, many years. We did a 2-day class along with another chief who also was a mentor, Frank Montagna from New York City. Frank wrote the book, Responding to Routine Emergencies. And Jim Murtaugh just co-wrote the book on high-rise firefighting. But these guys carried me along. Tommy Brennan, before he died, from Fire Engineering Magazine, I would sit down with him and just listen. So, I mean, that's why I did the Pass It On books, because a lot of people may not have the same opportunities that I did to meet some of these people. So I asked them, what would you tell somebody if you had a chance to meet them? And so Pass It On 1, 2, and 3. And then we did, Frank Lieb and I just did the 30 Fires You Must Know book. And it's similar. Again, it's passing it on. But in 30 fires, we through a whole process, we identified 30 fires we felt every firefighter should know about, because it would cover the majority of our firefighters in North America of what they cover: single family dwellings, commercial buildings, things like that. And again, so we just try to pass it on, man. And I don't want to abuse the term, but this isn't ours. I mean, I get a kick out of somebody who write an article, and then if somebody else publishes the article, and credits them, "You didn't have my permission." Shit, that wasn't your information. You learned that at the fire department. That's where you learned it. You don't have any ownership to this stuff. And look, I've done seminars and stuff, and that's fine. Get out there and do what you can. But man, you don't own any of this stuff unless you invented something that's got a patent. You got to share this stuff, and it's a big deal to me. And I still do it all the time, whether it's mentoring. And I'm not your guy to teach you how to stretch a hose line anymore. I'll talk to you all day about command, control, accountability, manage the fire ground, being the boss, that kind of stuff. But I do spend a lot of time mentoring guys going through cancer, and women going through cancer. When I went through mine, I wanted to, what do I do with this after I got cured? And it was that I got involved with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. And so at any one time, I'm mentoring two or three or four firefighters who are dealing with it. So.
Love it. Okay. You mentioned earlier egos. Egos has got to be one, it's got to be up there on fire departments, morale killers, and just how individuals, I associate ego and brotherhood. A lot of people want to use that term, but when egos play a factor, that brotherhood goes away. So I love how you mentioned that you and your chief have a working relationship. You're not always going to agree. And we can use that when it comes to firefighters not liking decisions fire chiefs are making, your battalion chief, your captains. But how can individuals put that aside and share that one common goal?
Yeah, so well, let's talk about that in the firehouse. I mean, if it gets that bad and you just can't deal with it, leave, go somewhere else. Everybody and their brother's hiring today, right? I mean, but if you can tolerate it and understand that not every decision that they're going to make is going to be perfect, then what you do, and I've shared this with my own son and many other younger fire officers, take what you can't control and make the best out of that. So let's say you're assigned to Station 93. And you don't like the decisions headquarters are making. I would say to you, let's not worry about headquarters right now. Let's go look at your apparatus. Let me see how well trained your firefighters are. How far can they throw a ladder? What's their mass confidence? How well do they search? Are they experts? And I mean experts on every tool on that rig, or experts in any task that come. See, and suddenly you get refocused. Wait a minute, I'm worried about them. Don't worry about them, because it's easy for us to sit around and bitch and watch TV and all that stuff. Or we can, you know what, fix our world. And what you're doing when you're doing that as a company officer, who is, by the way, the most critical position in the fire service, company officer. You can run a fire department without chiefs all day long, but without good company officers, you're in deep, deep trouble, right? So what you take what you can control and make the absolute best of it. And what happens then is not only do you create an effective company, but you then, without ego, start developing a reputation as a good boss who's focused. A Chase Sargent wrote a book called From Buddy to Boss. It's out there. Fire Engineering sells it. He really hits the nail on the head. Not everybody can make that transition. One day you're in probie school, and the union president or some chief will come in to tell you about the brotherhood and the sisterhood, and we're there for each other and we love each other. And we do. However, when you get promoted, that changes. You're not that anymore. You're now the boss. The reason I say the company office is the toughest job is because let's say I just got in your shit because you were late to work, and now I got to break bread with you. The chief can get in their car and go back to headquarters and go play video games or some shit, right? So it takes a very special person where the fire chief knows they can sleep well at night because they've got a good captain, a good lieutenant running that show. I've got a friend of mine who's dealing with some very horrible cancer right now. He worked for me in Florida as a captain. And he, I just, and we're working with him. We're trying to help him fight through this thing. But I've told people when I've asked people to send them coins and hats and stuff, just kind of bring up his spirits. And I said, he was that captain that my phone could be shut off and I know it's going to be done the right way. And that's what your reputation needs to be, that from the ground up, your firefighters know Captain So-and-so's got my back. Yeah, he got pissed off when I was late, or he got pissed off because we didn't do proper truck checks. So that captain creates an environment where you wouldn't think of upsetting that captain because you'd be letting him down, right? Or her down, you know what I'm saying. The other side of the coin is the boss knowing that they don't have to check on you for every 5 minutes because you're going to run that spot. You're going to follow department policy, you're going to follow procedures. We want to be black sheep and the bad boys and all that. So would you stop? This is a job. You're hired to manage these people, and you can't always be their friend. You got to be tough. And that's a volunteer or career. And I'd argue and tell you being a volunteer boss is probably harder because you're probably elected by the people you're yelling at.
That's right.
So it can be a little challenging. But before you take the test, before you decide to sign up and move up and promote up, decide if you really are going to do that or not. I mean, you can make a lot more money probably staying in your rank as a firefighter and just work overtime. But if you really want to be a decent boss, put something into it. Read. I mean, if you look behind me, there's a whole lot of books back here. I never stop. There's also a lot of grandkids stuff here. But I never stop reading. I never stop with the much, of course, on the internet today. And I'm not about talking about the stupid stuff. I'm reading John Norman, Vinnie Dunn, John Salka, Rick Lasky, whatever's out there. And the new people too. There's a lot of new writers that, you know what? Wow, I never even thought about that. I mean, I learned something a couple of weeks ago. And I'm senior man and all that stuff. I never thought about that. Every day is an opportunity. So
Love the
one
answer.
more tip. One
Okay.
more tip on the well, one more tip on the behavior side. I had a firefighter who was messing around on his spouse. And he came to me and he was riddled with guilt. So I said to him, man, you know what? You focus on what you want to do with yourself and how you're going to behave. Okay, and give me a minute because I'm going to tie this into the officers. I said, I understand you like that girl and all that stuff, but you got to decide what you're going to do here, buddy. You know what? Because everybody knows that shit today, especially, right? I don't go to EMS runs, and that's good for the patient and for me. I mean, if I'm nearby, I'll help out, but I'm not a medic. We got the best medics in the world. I'll hold an IV bag. I'll take care of a family. I'll comfort them, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not, that person. But we had a stabbing call, so I went by there, and I'm just in my buggy watching how they're handling it. And these women are coming out of this bar just dressed to the nines. The perfect distraction for any firefighter. And I look over, and here's that firefighter who just confessed to me about how upset he was. And he looks over at me. When we had met, just put a pause on the story. When we had met, I told him, I want you to pretend that your mom is on one shoulder, your wife is on the other, and I'm sitting on top of your helmet. Now behave that way. So he looks up at me when I watch him looking at these women coming out, and he goes like this. And I'll never forget it because I connected with the guy. So do we have a minute to talk about the officer's role in dealing with
Sure,
the
yeah,
women?
absolutely.
Yeah. So here's in this day and age, you people may think that our firefighters are softer, they're not as tough. They're just different. This is not the World War II generation. This is not the Vietnam generation. This is just a different generation. It's what we have to deal with, okay? And I like them. But I mean, I like the Vietnam guys. I worked the world work with the World War II guys. They were awesome. And there were some were assholes. Well, it's the same thing today, okay? Understanding in the company officer's role, and that's where I'm going with this. And please just talk to this because I always try. This is some of the most important life lessons I've had. No one cares whether you like a shaved head. No one cares if you don't like the blue hair. No one cares if there's a rainbow flag on that one's car. Leave that shit at the door. Get away. You know what? They ain't hurting you. Let's get back to the basics of America, right? Live free, right? Okay. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unless it's interfering with the job. I mean, I remember back in the day, you didn't have to like a Republican or Democrat. We would argue about it, and then we go have a beer. Today, you're going to run the guy over if they don't agree with you, right?
Yep.
So you got to be careful when you're the boss of the company, the boss in the firehouse, to manage that. You talk all day long, but you are getting paid on duty for a certain type of behavior. You're getting compensated. And it's not all freedom. It's not all do what I want and say what I want. That's not how it works. Now, if you hate a certain segment of our community, you shouldn't be in this job. You need to go do something else, okay? But if a little blue hair bothers you or you don't like an earring on a guy and you can live with it though, then just live with it. Okay? So that's one, is your personal opinions. That's not what we're paying you for. So
Right.
please, if we're going to talk about brother and sisterhood, then let's act like that a little bit, okay? A little bit of tolerance, a little understanding. And like I say, you don't know what the guy's going through in the car next to you at the traffic light, right? We all deal. So that's again, this is officer stuff. The next one is if a firefighter comes to you with a problem, okay, you need to act like if you're responding on an engine to a hazmat incident. The engine pulls up, we size it up. Oh, it's just a 3 gallon spill, floor dry, clean it up, we're good. It's a massive hazmat. We stabilize it. We call the experts. We don't cause any further harm. A personnel issue is the same exact thing. Almost none of you are qualified to deal with a personnel issue. Okay, sure, don't be late to work or I'm going to file the policy. Don't, take a shave before going to work, whatever your policies are, okay? You know how to do that. But when firefighter Susie comes to you and says, someone is abusing her at home, someone grabbed her butt at work, you stabilize it, you identify the organizational's policy, and then you notify who's next. You are not qualified to give Susie advice on whether her husband's a piece of shit or not. That isn't your business. I went through that. I gave advice to an employee many, many, many years ago, and I regretted doing it. Actually, I didn't regret doing it. I regret how the response was to it. So understand your capabilities. Understand what you're legally allowed to do. You're a medic, you can start an IV. You're an EMT, you cannot start an IV. Even though you want to start an IV, you cannot. As a supervisor, especially a first-line supervisor, you would love to give this employee advice on how to deal with that piece of shit or that clown or that person, but you are not qualified or authorized to provide that. Is the employee okay? Calm them down. Discuss the options. I can call EAP. I can call peer team, peer response team. I can notify the department psychologist. I am going to notify my boss just so they're aware that we're dealing with a situation here. What would you like me to do? And that's sort of the way we go. And again, what's the policy? What's the policy? Every department ought to have a policy that identifies when an employee's in crisis, what exactly do you do and what don't you do? See, the conflict is because we were taught at the academy, when we're at the kitchen table, we'll help each other with all our problems. We're brothers, we're sisters. But when you make that step up to boss, everything changes. Doesn't mean you can't be caring, but you are the boss. You are not part of the gang. And that's a tough transition for a number of people, for sure. So that's one. And my last lesson here is understand, and it sort of goes back to when I said, you never know what the person next to you in the stop sign's going through. We all dealing with shit, right? Everybody's dealing with
Right.
shit. We went to a fire. This is 15 years ago, neighboring community. I was the second new arriving chief. Single family dwelling, smoke showing, obvious work and fire. The first arriving chief took the command. I took the office side as we were aggressively moving in to deal with this. This is the minutes of arrival, right? And the crew identify they're finding a body in that. Wait, we found another body. Wait, we found another body. Wait, we found another body. They found four kids with knives in their chests. True story. They found kids who were murdered by their dad, who also murdered mom. It was a horrible call. That night I went home and I slept well because I felt we did everything we could. I've always been able to manage it that way. If we didn't do well, I'm going to lose sleep and we're going to fix that if we did. But that's me. That may not be you. Maybe you're a young parent. You just had kids and now you're seeing this. I can tell you when I first had my first child, my daughter Amy, that's 40 plus years ago now. But any call after her birth involving kids would bother me a little bit differently because I'd see my kid, right? So I've got five kids and seven grandkids now. So but I use that gauge. So anyway, a couple months later, a couple of the firefighters on that first knob and the first truck crew retired with 4, 5, 6 years on the job. I'm like, why? It was that call. Really? And I gave some thought to it, and I tend to come up with really simple analogies. And this was my analogy. Let's say, are you married? Okay, let's say you and me and your wife and my wife go out for dinner, and you order fish. I'm going to greatly discourage you from ordering fish because I cannot stand fish. I don't know why, just who I am, just don't like it. Do you ever try it? No, I don't want to. I can tell I don't give me that try it shit. I don't want to do it. I'm not interested in that. Doesn't make me right, doesn't make you wrong. It means you're just a little different than me when it comes to your what you like. Then after dinner, we go to a movie, and you and I, being firefighters, are laughing at this stupid movie. It's probably like Borat or some stupid stuff like that. And we're just laughing like we can't control ourselves. And our wives are looking at us like we're a couple idiots. We're not right, we're not wrong. Our sense of humor is just different. And that's what I try to get people to understand. The way Joe will react to that child in the house may not be how Mary acts. So as again, the first line officer, the first line company officer, but now also the chief when you're dealing with a more crisis, a larger situation. Take away what you think and open your mind a little bit and try and understand. And that's really what got me focused on this whole behavioral health thing, the differences in people. And I think it's a big deal. I think officers have to be trained in that. But how, so whether it's a crisis, whether meaning an internal issue in the firehouse, an employee comes to you, whether it's that really bad call, make sure your organization has policies, procedures in place. Make sure you've got a peer support team. Make sure you know how to reach EAP. But even if it wasn't a bad call to you, and we've all been on calls where you're surprised that somebody either did or did not think it was as bad or as not as bad as you thought. Like, well, you don't, nah, like that. A lot of times they're hiding it, but other times, in my particular case, I'm just putting it where it fits in my mind, my emotions. So anyway, I've rambled on long enough.
No. But I also want to hear the ending. Your friend that signaled each shoulder. What happened on that story?
Oh, so he straightened out. He's still married.
Okay.
And he connected. He saw me later on and he went, I said, yeah, I told you, if you're tempted to look at somebody else, remember your mom's here, your wife's here, and the chief's sitting up here, and just act that way. Just remind yourself that 1 minute of messing around or whatever you do, that's going to screw your whole life up. So, but
Absolutely.
it was an example of how you try to help them connect with something that they can relate to. And he related to his wife. I said, picture your wife's got a camera here, your mom here. Now, how are you going to behave? And I think we all need that reminder from time to time, especially in the firehouse. If we were on camera and our wives and our spouses, husbands were watching, just do that, man. And look, I came from a generation where we got a lot of, away with a lot of stuff in the firehouse you wouldn't think about doing today. It was just how it was back then, but today it's different. That's just the way it is.
Definitely. Okay. Love it. I love it. Leadership. What does leadership look like to you? What should leadership look like in the fire service?
Yeah, so it's easy to say do the right thing, but what is the right thing? It's the way you were trained, what your policies and procedures tell you to do. And if your policies and procedures are stupid, then reach out and see what you can do to get on the committee to change them. But in the meantime, you're still going to have to enforce those policies and procedures. The worst thing you can do is say, well, I'm enforcing it, but it's stupid. Now you're forgetting your loyalty to the organization. See, when you were a firefighter, your loyalty is all to your troops. As you move up, your loyalty, of course, is taking care of your troops, but you're a little bit part of headquarters staff now. And that's why I tell people, think long and hard before you take the test, because you're going to have to carry stuff out. I had a couple of guys working for me over the years. Well, chief just wants to do it. I think it's stupid. Get out of here. You can't work. I can't work with you in this environment. If we're in an office and we're meeting on an issue, keep talking about it. And then when we're done, we agree we're going to enforce this policy. If we don't like it, our hose stretches aren't long enough. Our nozzles aren't the right ones. Well, we're going to keep using them until we come up with a better idea. The fact is that leadership means you're going to listen to those ideas, and ultimately you're going to make the decision. And we have to, that's that 95-5% rule. Sometimes we're just not going to get what we want, and it's okay. You don't die on the hill for every little thing like that. Give me a minute. Leadership is also listening. That's been difficult for me in my career. I think I know it all, and I think I'm smarter than everybody else. Now, I'm telling you about my ego, right? And my little shell inside. Obviously, I don't, but we all kind of think, oh, I know better than that. I get a kick out of you see a firefighter with 5 years on the job. The chiefs don't know shit. They don't know. Would you shut up? Okay. You don't know. Okay. Now, if you have a better idea, there should be a process in your organization where you can, whether it's your union, your volunteer association, meetings with the chief. But sometimes we have to salute and say yes. And that's, what you would want. Okay. If you give an order, you want that the same way with the people who supervise you, right?
Right.
So, leadership, there's what is another one is leadership is telling somebody to go to hell and they look forward to the trip, right? That's a little bit of leadership, convincing somebody it's the right thing to do. But I think overall leadership is doing what you say and say what you're doing and live what's expected, set the example. I mean, I see departments that, they have fitness requirements. And you got a 350-pound lieutenant who can't even button her shirt up. And I'm not, I understand the 350 guy. What are you doing to fix it at least, right? I had a captain work for me years ago, Danny Quarter in Virginia, one of the absolute best company officers ever. And Danny had a couple members of his crew that didn't like to exercise. And this is well before we were talking about wellness and fitness. He knew it was the right thing. So one day I get the story that Danny took his entire crew, and he had four or five in the firehouse at the time. And he got on there, he got on the engine, and they went out to some subdivision. And they all got off the truck, and he told the driver to drive 2 miles down the road. We'll be there in a little while. And he made everybody walk to the truck. We're going to do something. We're going to do some kind of fitness. If you're going to fight me on it, then I thought that was awesome leadership. He sort of forced them, but a walk? Walk's not hurting anybody. And it got people started and got people focused. And sometimes leadership is, you know what, thanks for your opinion. This is what we're going to do. And we see more of that on the fire ground, on the training ground. I don't have time to discuss stuff with you. Now, you see something that's wrong, needs to be fixed. Shit, speak up. Everybody understands that. But if I tell you to stretch a line to the second floor, that I better blink and see that second floor, getting hit with the line. And that's, when you get there and the floor is missing, let me know. We're going to fix that. We'll get you out of there. But sometimes it's salute. Sometimes there's discussion. And I think a good boss is going to allow discussion in certain circumstances and then make that decision. In other circumstances, no, go there right now. Evacuate the building right now. Where the hell's your SCBA? Get out right now. Sometimes we have to just do that. And it's tough. Again, I mentioned this to you earlier that we, are the brotherhood, the sisterhood, the friends, the buddies, the people we go fishing with, the people we go, and now you're their boss. It's a little bit challenging. Well, you know what? Ultimately, you have to do what the organization expects of you. And again, I don't want you to think I'm saying to bow down to everything the organization says. If you've got a better idea, go through a process and let the bosses know, hey, I've got a better idea. I've done some research. Here's the idea, and here's what we're doing. I mean, we've had guys come back from conferences, and in most cases, we love the ideas. That's why we sent you. But we had one guy come back recently in a neighboring department. where the instructor was teaching them never lay out, never lay out the hydrant. Let another company worry about that. Wait a minute. We begged for hydrants our entire lives. Tie into the hydrant. Don't expect the second dude to get it. Now they can pump your line, they can bring your water, but at least lay it out. At least know what your water source is going to be. And I give that as a very loose example, or others. If I have to make a grab, I'm going to go in without my air pack. My response to that is, I guess, show me the fire. Let's see what you're talking about here. But in most cases, you're stupid. So it's about understanding what the policies are, the procedures, the expectations of the department. And I guess kind of remember how you felt the day you got on the job and try to keep that spirit, that motivation, that excitement. I hope I'm not rambling too much here. I'm just,
No, I'm letting you flow. I love it.
I just love it. And you know, so much of what I've learned, I've learned through bruising, through mistakes, through errors. I almost led a crew right into a hallway where the whole floor was missing once. Never again will I ever not go in without a thermal imager and without a tool to check the floor. Things like that. Okay, so.
You mentioned earlier, and it's definitely spot on. You know, departments around the country have policies and procedures, but the fitness policy, I don't know if it's because of today's world, today's society, people's feelings get hurt, HR suing, but a lot of departments don't, I don't want to say they don't have it, but they care to shy away from a fitness policy because they don't want to hurt feelings when we all know firefighting and fitness go hand in hand.
And they call it tactical athletes, right?
Right.
I think it's Mark Bayshore, who's retired chief of Prince George's County, Maryland. He says, could you rescue you? And that really resonates with a lot of people. That's a pretty good comment. And, you know, it really can fall back down to the fire officer. So here's an example. You've got a member or two on your crew that's out of shape and not fit. Well, you can either counsel them if you're qualified to do that or provide them with assistance, but you also are going to train. And if they can't keep up with the training, then you bring that up to your superiors. So-and-so cannot throw a ladder. They just don't have the arms. So-and-so lasted 8 minutes on their SCBA. Okay. Now, I think we are doing a huge disservice by allowing people to get through the academy. Okay. And I don't know that it's everywhere, but it certainly exists. And I understand for a variety of reasons, we want this one or that one to work at our fire department, but we're setting this one or that one up for failure. And, you know, the hiring thing is a whole other thing. And that's probably the part we have the least control over. Okay, and then you'll see sometimes people will get pushed through the academy or let's extend their probation. No, the worst thing you can do is extend somebody's probation. Probation is a defined measure. Why are you extending it? They didn't get through it. Now, if you're at fault, you didn't train them, you know, the right way and meet, that's fine. But no, I'm sorry, it didn't work out. You know what? As bad as you want to fly this plane, you are not qualified to be a pilot, and we're really sorry. Okay? But I'm not going to put you in this plane responsible for the lives on this the people in this plane, right? And I don't want to get over dramatic. Let's face it, most of the runs we're going to, we're not making a rescue, we're not having a writ, but it's going to happen. And we have to be prepared for the it's going to happen part. And that means when I, you know, I tease the kids that I work with, you know, they have less than 1% body fat, most of them. I'm like, shit, that I got more fat in my neck than you've got in your whole body, right? But there's a difference here, okay? You see what I'm
Right.
saying? So we have an obligation to make fitness work. And whether it's what Danny Corder did when he made them start walking, or it's an organized program in your department where there is no choice, or you sit down with labor and work it out. I understand you get to a certain age and they tell you have a heart condition. You don't want to go for a physical. You don't want to get this checked. You don't want to go for a colonoscopy. You don't want to go for prostate checks. Well, you have to. The problems are not going to go away. And it is very predictable if you're carrying around an extra 50, 7,500 pounds, that you are going to have a problem, and it may interfere with us. And it may, you know, I'm going to tell you, your husband and your kids, knowing you were 5'4" and 300 pounds, that you dropped dead at the phone. Who was shocked about that, right? So, and I'm not saying that you do it overnight, but make an effort. That's all we're saying. Make an effort. You know, no fries, get a salad instead with that burger. Little increments. And there's so many people in our business that will counsel you and help you through this. And you know what? One day your coat's a little looser, and man, is that a motivator. And then things get better. So, you know, but tie it to training. I know a lot of fire officers are frustrated. They gave me this firefighter. He's useless. Why? Well, I'll look at him. No, it doesn't work that way. Let's go do training. Let's throw ladders. And not to get rid of them, to see if they can do it or not. And then let them say, wow, I really do need to lay off the Twinkies or whatever it is. So do it based upon the job expectations, right?
Okay. All right. What sparked the notion for you to create the Secret List, Firefighter Close Calls?
I've always liked to share information, even as a young firefighter. I would read magazines and make photocopies of stuff and put them up in the firehouse. But really, a friend of mine who's the past chief of Sandy Spring, Georgia, Jack McElfish, passed away less than a year ago. Jack was a dear friend, a wonderful mentor, and just a really good, awesome fire chief who loved the job. And Jack used to do something similar. There was about a dozen of us where every month or so, Jack would find articles and he would have his secretary make photocopies and send us these things. But he'd also put a bottle cap in there, pencil shavings. I mean, he just screwed with you, right? One year I got a Christmas card. He whited out, "This is a sample," and just wrote "Merry Christmas." I mean, he was just a character. He'd just send you this junk. But in it was these just wonderful pearls of wisdom of articles and stuff like that. Anyway, so when I discovered the internet in 1997, I started looking for searching. It was on AOL, firefighter this, fire chief that, fire truck. And I'd see news feeds. It was nothing like the internet today, right? And I'd start sharing this with people. And I'd share it with this one, I'd say with that one. And soon I had 100, 150 people or something on this mailing list. Well, one of my firefighters actually used to work for AOL, and he said, "You know, if you put brackets around it, it becomes blind carbon copy." Oh, no kidding. There's a tip. So I started doing that, and somebody said, "What happened to everybody on your list?" I said, "They're blind carbon copy." He said, "Who was on it?" I said, "Oh, it's a secret. I just said that. There was no magic to this." Right, we didn't hire some magical law firm or a marketing firm to help us figure this out. And so I started building it up, building it, building it. And over time, I mean, we've several hundred thousand people receive every time the secret list goes out. We're crazy proud of that. We also take great pride in, rarely do we have to correct something we put out there, but when we do, when we have to, we do. But we're very cautious about sending out information. Most of our information comes from people giving us a heads up, calling us, sending something on the website, sending a text, saying, "Hey, are you listening on the scanner in so and so, Pennsylvania just had a collapse. Now we're going to listen to it." So it's all sorts of different ways that people send us the information. So we built it up over time, and now the secret list is something we're really proud of. And you know, we try not to send it too much. We send it when we think there's something really important to say. Like, we put one out yesterday because they're doing a fundraiser for the two chiefs in Idaho.
Idaho.
So let's all buy. We all need T-shirts. Just buy the damn T-shirt and help the family, right? But we also put law and duty death notifications out as soon as we know about it. We don't wait for this or that. Once we see it, if it's in the news, we put it out. And this is not because we're spreading anything. We could shut down tomorrow, and I just have more free time. This is so people can learn. Okay, if you hear that there was a collapse in Mayfield, New Jersey today, if you have a fire an hour later, you're going to be thinking a little bit about what happened there. That's it. That's the whole motivation behind it. And then we will add links, as you know, we'll give you the video about it and when we can find that out. But the idea is so many firefighters, I guess when Gordon and I spoke at FDIC this year, we talked about the top 10, the bottom 10, and then the middle 80. The top 10 are ate up. They're 55 scanners. They're always listening. They're on the job. When they're at work, they're listening to the neighboring department's case. We're going to be called there. I love that. I identify with that. Okay. The 10% don't even know what a scanner is. Do not shut the radios off when they're at work and hope the bells don't go off. Okay. And we probably spend 90% of our time dealing with that bottom 10%. Okay. Most shouldn't probably be at work. The middle are good people who are there to do the job. They're not overly ate up with it. When they go home, they go home. Okay. So when we're dealing with those, I need to get to that 80% who probably are not going to go to certain websites when they're off duty. That's who we're trying to hit. And that's where we've had some pretty good success.
Okay.
So that's where the secret list came from. And then 500 close calls grew from that. I'll tell you that story later if you want.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So Gordon Graham, a retired commander of the California Highway Patrol and a noted attorney, and I taught for a group called Command School in the late 90s, early 2000s. Command School was the invention of a chief named Glenn Usden out of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Glenn contracted with myself, Gordon Graham, Dennis Rubin, Kurt Varone, Carl Holmes, a number of others. And 3 or 4 times a year, he would bring us to different parts of the country to have command school. It'd be like a little mini FDIC kind of thing. Gordon and I became friends because he was receiving the seeker list and he understood, what I was doing. He says, "Why don't you have a website?" I said, "Well, at the time, I really didn't have the money and I didn't have the time." And he said, "Well, when you have the time, I'll fund it." So it wasn't a couple months later, I thought, I don't want to look this opportunity and ignore it. So I reached out to Gordon and he said, "Let's do it." So we contract with firecompanies.com and they developed and built the Firefighter Close Calls website. Today, Firefighter Close Calls is managed by an all-volunteer team, all not volunteer firefighters, most of them are career, but a team who is devoted to the mission, about a dozen of them. I write the secret list almost exclusively, but they post the stories, they solicit news, they keep the other parts of the website going, that kind of stuff. And so Gordon has been paying the bills for, I guess it was our 25th year. So he's funded that whole website, and we're happy to do it. We love what we're doing, and it's people say, "Doesn't it depress you all these stories?" I mean, shit happens, so we're going to share it and kind of get it out there. So maybe it'll stick. Maybe you'll slow down after you see that so and so Virginia Fire Department rolled their tanker going 70 miles an hour in the rain. Maybe you won't do that tomorrow. And that's kind of it, right? There's no money involved. We don't make any money off the website. And one of the reasons we did that too is there was from once in a while there would be a magazine that wouldn't publish something I wrote. They didn't want to publish it. They didn't like what I said or whatever. This gives us that opportunity to pretty much say what we want.
Right.
And for the most part, we back it up. So yeah, that's the story behind that.
I was just going to ask you with what the secret list is about, and it's not always bad news either, but a majority of the time it's firefighters or fire departments personnel that have made a mistake that has caused sometimes the ultimate sacrifice or injuries. So my question to you is, does that not kill your drive sometimes, having to put out, like, when you see a video, especially with today's world, everybody has a cell phone camera with the video. Does it kind of make you feel like disappointed? Like, why would they do that? Why would they drive like that? Does that bother you sometimes?
Yes, but then I remember the 80% are going home and probably not connecting most of the time. But a lot of those 80% are subscribed because they're only going to get the meat for it. It's like It's an orange without pits. We're just going to give you the good stuff. You don't even have to peel it. It's already done for you. So yeah, and I'll say that from time to time. I'll say, you know what, especially with the cancer stuff, if you haven't figured out to not breathe that shit at this point, I don't know what else I can do for you.
Right.
You know, we would sit around after a good job, and in the heyday, mid-70s to early 80s, I was doing 50, 60 good fires a year. And I consider that pretty good work. Not the company, me. I was on those runs. And we would blow black snots after a good job. We'd be blowing our nose and we'd be showing each other. We didn't know what we didn't know. You know?
Right.
And then, 40 something years later, I find out that I got cancer and it's about ready to eat me alive. And luckily they caught it, right? So we're not going to stop. We keep pushing it. That, I think, if you haven't figured out that you got to do a 360 when possible, I don't know what else I can do to tell you. If you haven't learned how to read smoke from some of the experts like Dave Dodson, I don't know what else to tell you. But we're not going to stop. Yeah, we'll get hammered, annoyed or hung up a little bit, but we don't stop. And we've been around longer than most all the websites. And all that, and I think that's part of our secret is we're just going to tell you what the deal is, and then you do what you think's best. But I am so thrilled when I'm at FDIC or any of the other programs, and somebody come up, we read that article and we did change or we didn't do this or I saw that. That's what matters. But it's you got time on the job and you just say, oh, I've known that for years. But who's teaching that to the kid who just started a year ago? So we try to be that motivating factor. And that's also really where 30 Fires came from. 30 Fires book is I was in a conversation with some firefighters and I said, you know what happened here is just like Hackensack. And they're like, what's a Hackensack? I'm like, shit. So that's, and had this idea of a book in the back of my head for a while. And then Frank and I were talking. I said, I'm getting ready to work on this project. He said, I'd like to be in on it with you. So that's where 30 Fires came from, and we're so blessed. It's doing so well. We just wrote $10,000 checks, four $10,000 checks to the Ray Downey Scholarship, to the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, to the Tunnels to Towers, and to the First Responder Center of Excellence. And that was just in the first couple of months of the book. It remains on the bestseller list for on Amazon. And again, I'm not bragging. I'm just taking an idea and sharing it. We don't make any money, so you buy the book, it's for your own gain, and you're going to make a charitable donation to some very important organizations. But we just sort of like when I did the Pass It On books, fire engineering it for years. But when Bobby Halton was alive, you ought to do a book. You ought to do a book about what? I said, do you really need another book on how to stretch a line? I mean, you guys haven't figured that shit out yet, right? So I was riding in an airplane and I was riding in the airplane and I was looking at Esquire magazine. Esquire magazine every month has a profile and it's called What I Know. And I'm like, boom, that's the book. So I proposed the idea. They really liked it. And the first book, Pass It On, What We Know, What We Want You to Know, was based upon that. Like I would never know, I would never be able to meet Robert De Niro, but I can read what he wants me to know. The same concept. What is John Salka? What is Tommy Richardson? What is Jim Murtaugh? What is all these guys that we'd all love to listen to and learn from? Just can't always do it. So we gave them an opportunity to do that. And Pass It On one, Pass It On two, and Pass It On three were killers, and now we're pushing out 30 fires, and Frank and I are getting ready to start talking about 30 more fires you must know. So,
Okay. Chief, with what you're involved in, with what you know, and the fact that you still are active as deputy fire chief of your organization, what are the expectations for your members?
our boss sets that tone and we carry it out. We provide him input. We provide him with ideas. He's very active. He happens to be the chair of the Commission on Fire Accreditation. He's very engaged in teaching. He goes to conferences. He's very engaged. He knows what's going on out there. The expectations are set by the boss based upon annual planning. And so my expectation as a deputy chief is to carry that out. Now, almost everything I do involves the fire ground and after the fact safety issues. Okay, that's my role and responsibility. And so my job when I get to the fire ground is to know exactly the way my department operates. And this is what we do. We do not freelance. We do this. We don't do that. We always stretch a line with water, but there are times where it's not always. And that's what he trusts us to make that decision. We had a fire a couple weeks ago. He got there first when his was in his neighborhood. And this is the guy that you better have water and you better have a line charged. I said, forget the line. You got a person on the balcony. Go get him. So he understands there's times to, he's a veteran firefighter, almost 50 years on the job, right? So he knows. But our expectations are set based upon what he directs us to do, based upon input from all of us, based upon input from the community, based upon nationally accepted standards. This is how we operate. And there are ways we operate. I mean, you're going to manage highway incidents a very specific way. Why? Because we're going to do our best to not get you run over. We're going to operate at a single family dwelling fire a certain way because we have an obligation to the people who own that house to get them out and get water on that fire as quickly as possible. And that's what we're going to do. And if we don't do it right, we're going to do it again and again and again through training. And it never stops. And again, I welcome anyone to come spend some time with us. It never stops. It's constant. So what expectations do I have? I have the organizational expectations. Now, some personal ones. God help you if you leave a fire scene and there's still hose on the ground with a mutual aid company. We are last to leave. Okay. You see somebody struggling from another company, I better see that. Okay, I see you in the back of a building without your gear on, zero tolerance. I mean, I'm giving you a couple of goofy examples, but I don't. Our culture is based upon what we, the senior staff, recommend to the boss and what he puts out as our policy, our procedures, our way of operating. And you will generally, within a little wiggle room, see all three of our shifts operating pretty much the same way. Unfortunately, there are fire departments where it's three different fire departments.
That's right.
We do not, we zero tolerance for that. We're not going to do good on A shift, have a bunch of knuckleheads on B shift, and C shift sleeps through everything. That ain't going to happen. And I can tell you that you will feel that. But you're going to know it from the first day. It's not going to be a shock. You're going to understand we operate a certain way. Customer service is. And I don't mean it from the standpoint that we'll fix Mrs. Smith's window, although we will. The fire is customer service. Pre-planning your at-risk child is customer service. Your mom and dad live in our community. We know about them in our system, and we also call them on a rotational basis. Hey, it's firefighters checking in. You guys doing okay? You're on our senior. Oh, thank you for calling. Blah, blah, blah. Right? That's what we are. And I can tell you, if you could get my boss to take his shirt off, he'd show you a lot of scars. It is not easy to keep pushing. It's constant. But you know what? He's super proud of it. We're super proud of it. Again, I can tell you, if I'm out of town, I can tell you pretty much how our fire is going to go. Not always perfect, but I'm going to tell you it's based upon we always identify a water supply. We always do a 360. That kind of stuff. And again, I'm cautious with the word always because nothing is always.
That's right.
But the expectation is this. Now, if you don't do that, just tell us why. We didn't lay out because they said there was a kid on the second floor window. We saw the smoke. Mom was screaming. We went up with a ground ladder and grabbed the kid. Congratulations. Here's your pin. You did the right thing. Okay. But generally, we have certain ways we want you to operate. And that it really, I mean, you go to the New York City Fire Department, there are procedures on what you will do. First do, second do. You're riding in the seat. You got to operate like that. And we operate, again, in obviously a much smaller level, but our expectations are what's best for the people involved. What's best for our firefighters? Fitness. We have a whole fitness center, a whole building devoted to health and fitness. Now, what's best for the firefighters? I mean, I always like it, but you know what? We're taking care of you. We're taking care of you for the people whose pictures are in your wallet, all that kind of stuff. So when you ask me what's the set expectations, it's based upon a holistic view of how we want our organization to operate.
Okay, love it. Taking notes. In your personal opinion, why do certain organizations allow individuals who have been subpar their entire career promote them when they decide to promote, when they know that nothing's going to change?
Sometimes it's political. We need to make our numbers look different. I don't know how to say it any differently. I'm very open-minded. My first and best captain ever, John Brown, was a black guy. The flag at my firehouse was the United Nations flag. They used to tease us about it because we were so, this is in the 70s. We were diverse, right? We didn't know we're diverse shit. It just worked out that way. I think people who don't understand our job, and that may be people in positions of authority on the fire department, we need the department to look differently. I have no problem with that, but don't set the person up for failure. Okay? Hire from within your community. I think some of the best firefighters are the ones who live in the community that they serve. Okay, because there's a buy-in there, right? You're not going 2 hours away, but whatever. Sometimes you can't afford to live in that community, also, right? But I think we're pushing, this one's a friend of the chief, or this one's a so and so. I think we promote these people up because we're afraid, and we have failed to tell them the truth. We're afraid to tell them the truth, and the truth's got to be backed up with fact. Oh, you're a piece of shit. Why? I just don't like it. You drive a Volkswagen. Well, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, look, on this fire, this happened. At this training, this happened. It's been documented. We've offered you numerous training opportunities. You're still not functioning well. You can't possibly think about promoting if you can't do the job you're going to be supervising. So again, it's a thin line in a lot of communities. Because the politicians feel one way and they don't understand the job. But it's really also the chief and the local or the association's responsibility to make sure the elected officials and the appointed officials, like city managers, understand the job. Why did these people get bumped out of the academy? Let me show you. Come down to the academy and let me show you. Let's have you stretch a line. Let me have you throw a ladder. The IFF runs an academy for elected officials. Every community needs to have their elected officials going to either that or do your own so they understand. This is not that I don't like boys or girls or people with purple hair. This is that I need them to meet a certain level of fitness mentally and physically to do the job. There's no harm, no foul here. And I think that we just haven't counseled them. We haven't told them. I think there's a nervousness. Well, if I tell them this, they're gonna sue me. They'll file a grievance. I know a young fire officer who was dealing with a situation like that, and he didn't back down. He documented. He worked his hardest to try and help this employee. This person should never have been even able to graduate the academy, but they did. And now you're stuck with it in the field. That's setting the organization up for failure. That's setting you up as a lieutenant or as a captain, right? So anyway, this employee filed an EEO complaint against this officer. That's a bad day when you're notified that they're doing that. It's like, ah, shit. So that will scare people off from doing their jobs. But you moved so and so in here that you didn't think you'd get rid of him in the academy. Why should I do that? Well, somebody's got to do it. And it needs to start at the academy level in a very fair and equitable way. If you can't climb ladders, you can't be in the fire department. It's just the way it works. And that kind of stuff. So it starts at the bottom. We're going to get the academy level where we're letting people through that we shouldn't. Okay. And then we're putting them in the firehouse with a lieutenant or a captain who's already trying to figure out why those people don't always like me, and now I have to suddenly deal with this. You're passing me on. It's like my oldest daughter's a public school teacher. She raises half the kids she gets because they didn't raise them at home. They didn't teach them discipline. So we're dealing with that. I don't think that's always necessarily fair to the lieutenant or the captain. I think that the organization needs to own that. But again, the first time this person files a complaint, like, it's not worth it. Forget it. I'm not going to do it. Anyway, let me just back to the other one. So that fire officer stuck with the EOC complaint. He went to HR during this, before the complaint, and said, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I'm doing it. You're doing what you're supposed to. Okay. So again, he's not the expert. So he went to HR. What would you like me to do about this person who hides in the bunk room, does not participate in training, is useless on the fire ground, and you dumped her as her fifth station to me, or her, him, as the fifth station that now I'm having to deal with it? Well, he drew a line and said enough is enough. And then he got an EOC complaint filed against him. He won the complaint. One day he's on his way to the firehouse. The phone rings. It's HR. We need to meet with you immediately. He's like, what now? They gave him a commendation for doing it right. They gave him a commendation for doing it right. That's the way to do it. It's not a black, white, boy, girl thing. It's just, you're in the fire department. There's certain expectations. It's this is not the this is not the school janitor who may work a little slower and it's okay. You've got all night. Okay? And you work by yourself. This is teamwork. You've got to be able to work with people. You cannot hide in the bunk room when we're doing training. We need to sit at the dinner table together. And if you have certain dietary issues, no problem. We can make that work, right? I mean, get rid of the excuses at the company officer level to build that team up. And again, forget about what headquarters is doing today. What are you doing with the three, four, five people that are your responsibility? How good is Engine 93 when they arrive on the scene under your command? That's all I'm worried about. And if I can get five or six or seven Engine 93s to operate that way, all's good.
ISO class ones. Very few departments are able to achieve that. So my question to you is, a lot of chiefs and organizations want to strive to get that because number one, it's a great accolade. It's great for the community to know. But besides getting to the point where you meet the check boxes of hitting what you have to hit for ISO class one, I also think that training should go with that as well. Like, it's great that we say, hey, we're ISO class one, but when Mr. and Mrs. Smith watch us on the fire ground, we are absolutely terrible.
And there are departments like that, and we have our days too. There's nobody who's perfect out there. I think in chiefs and ours certainly is very proud of our ISO class one, but we're not ISO class one because of ISO class one. We are who we are, and we use that as a measurement to see how we meet national standards. We use the accreditation process to see what we're doing. But if we can't lay a line, then none of that matters. Okay. Whether it's accreditation, ISO, or whatever, but the fire service is the most unregulated public safety business, right? You can be a fire department and have no standards. You do what you want, whatever the state, and some states have little to no requirements, right? So the EMS side of your house is regulated. You've got to meet national standards. You've got to be able to do this. You've got to have lights. So we look at the fire accreditation and ISO as that. Well, we don't know what else is out there to measure us by. So we're going to use those, but we also, every working incident, the commander's got to fill out a document that's get feedback from all the companies. How did it go? What went right? What went wrong? What does our training division need to work on? And again, we have our days. Remember, going to a fire is an arm wrestle with your arm pinned, and you have to win with your arm pinned going back the other way. So we're losing from the moment goes on. So everything we do prior to that run is how we can provide that service to those people. So yeah, I'm well aware of ISO class one, two, three, four departments, and you scratch your head because they're only doing the bare minimum training. They're only doing what is required. We go far, far beyond that, and we happen to be able to meet those standards. But again, how are you measuring your department? By what the chief thinks? You got to look at some outside things to make those comparisons. I'm all about ISO and accreditation, and as much as I am about the guys that understand, the most important thing we can do is get those people out of the house. That doesn't take that stuff out of that. It just formalizes the organization a little bit so we can measure against what else is out there. And I think that's the way to look at it. If we're an ISO class one, we keep hitting people while we're responding to calls. That doesn't mean a damn thing. So if we're an ISO class one and our officers are not constantly attending training at their area responsibility. So for example, quarterly, I have to be at our command training center and at our burn tower. I don't touch hose. I'm in the buggy. I'm managing the incident. I'm getting training. You'd be surprised how many chiefs around the country haven't been to training in years, but yet they're showing up at the fires that their troops trained on earlier. And chief, we don't do that. And then you have a conflict. So our chiefs are required to participate in training, and all the chiefs in our area do that. You won't find a chief showing up on any of our runs through our mutual aid districts that are not also attending training. And again, I'm not telling the chief to go throw a ladder. I don't want you to do that. You had your chance to do that. I want you in the buggy or standing wherever you stand with your pad, with your accountability or game sheet, whatever you're going to call it, managing the incident, using your radio, using your expertise to see what's going right, what's going wrong, and taking care of those kids who are inside getting their asses kicked trying to make a difference.
Perfect. Okay. With the day and age of social media, how everything's easily accessible, you are what I call, and I hope you don't get any disrespect, that you're an OG. You've seen the progression, the evolution of the fire service. But with that, do you think sometimes like certain products, certain things we're doing, it's just reinventing the wheel,
Of
and
course.
now all of a sudden it's a For me, and this is just my personal belief, like there are some things that we are charging members and departments for where it's like that's been around, but they're just putting a different spin on it, and it's not really doing anything but putting money in their pockets.
Well, that's America, man. That's enterprise. It's the world of we live in a capitalist society. We're doing it, right? I see that. I mean, except for nozzles. And I know I'll get slammed for this. I just don't get excited about nozzles. Our firefighters and our company officers just tell us what you want. We'll get it for you. And I know I'm speaking for the boss. This shape, that shape, that's great. To me, if we're getting 150, 180, 200 gallons a minute on there, I don't give a shit what it comes out of, to be honest with you, okay? And if there's a new gimmick, a new idea, and the troops like it and they can justify changing it, then they'll look at it, right? I think it, unless it's a fiscal issue, and of course, then the fire chief has responsibility. But if the troops see a new idea and it's a yes or a no, consider what they want and consider maybe there is a value, maybe there is a, convince them to convince you. Prove to me that this is a better nozzle than what we're buying now. And if you can convince me, then we're going to do it, right? A friend of mine just took over as a fire chief of a nearby, not very close, but a fire department. And they didn't have Halligan tools. The chief did not believe in Halligan tools.
Wow.
What the hell, right? I mean, every day you hear about some weird story, right? Well, the first thing this guy did was buy a dozen Halligan tools. Put them up, there's a value for that, right? Well, maybe next week somebody comes up with a new tool to force doors quicker. We should look at that. As far as the invention and stuff, again, there's a guy named Bill Grillo. Bill's dad and mom started Morning Pride, the bunker gear people. They since sold it off. But Bill years ago came up with a thermal imager that clipped on your helmet. This was a great idea because now your hands were free. Your hands were free. Firefighters did not buy into it. It was a failure. Because they want this. I need to hold it. But your hands are free. You can now. Well, I just saw recently somebody came up with a clip on your helmet thermal imaging camera 20 years later. Maybe now we'll accept it, right? Isn't that kind of how things work, right? I mean, we don't like anything from the minute it starts. I mean, everything sucks until we come up with a better idea or it becomes our idea. But just to answer your question, I think there's all sorts of good choices out there. Be a good steward of the tax dollars. Okay, don't piss people's money away. And you know, if this new nozzle is going to deliver better water, with less friction loss and less wear and tear on the firefighters, let's get one and play with it. Let's look at that. Just show me the reason. Otherwise, you know, I've always been very open-minded to new ideas, but I'm very much a prove it to me person. And like I said about the nozzles and stuff, you know, if it's going to improve things, let's look at it. If not, you just like it, or they got a cool sticker with a skeleton on it or something, then I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. All right. I always like to ask this the guest this last question, and it's definitely fitting for you because you are still very much active in the fire service. So, with that being said, where would you like to see yourself
In
retire?
20 minutes next week.
Where would you like to see yourself when you decide to hang it all up? Like, is fire chief in the cards, or are you going to stay where you're at?
I've been chief of department. I'm not a good chief of department. I'm a much, much, much better deputy. I have a genetic disorder in getting along with City Hall, and I can prove that. I am much, much better in the. I mean, I love our council. I love our township trustees. I like to think they love me. I have a great relationship, but I'm not that person. I was designed to be a good fire officer, but not to be the guy who goes to City Hall. Because I don't give a rat's ass about public works. I don't care about the parks. I don't. I just do not care. Y'all deal with your parks all day long. My job is when the kid falls in the park because he got hit by a ball and he can't breathe, that we get there immediately. That's all I care about. And that's been a challenge for me as a chief. I've been a chief in Ohio, Virginia, and Florida, and that's because I've pissed off city managers in my career. So I'm much, much better as a deputy chief, and I love it because, again, once in a while I have to go with the boss, but it's just to shake hands and be nice. So where would I like to see myself? I'd like to keep doing what I'm doing as long as possible. The indicators will be my physical or mental condition, and I hope I'll know when it's time. I don't want to stop, but another gauge I use, and I talk to others about it in the area, when I don't feel like I'm bringing value to the scene, then it's time. But when I get to almost all scenes, I'm assigned the role to either support the commander or take a division. Since cancer, I stopped packing up. I don't go in anymore. I'm also 70. I shouldn't be packing up and going on anymore. The greatest thing I can do on the fire ground is to arrive and say, "Hey, what do you need?" And say, "Hey, did you see this?" Because I'm dealing with commanders that are half my age. Amazing commanders, awesome kids. But you said the OG thing. What I can do is tell them what I'm seeing. That's what I do. And 99% of the time, I have a division, whether it's Charlie Alpha or whatever, or I sit in the buggy with the commander if it's a particularly tough incident and help them out. But that's the value I bring. And I'd like to keep going for a while. I hope I know, and I hope I'll be mature enough to know when it's time.
No, okay. One last thing that hit me, and I definitely want to hear your take on it. So there's no doubt you are pretty much into the job. You love the job. The job has provided so much for you and your family. But when you were diagnosed with cancer, I don't want to say what did that feel like, but was it a realization of how quickly the job can go? And I say that because I know of firefighters who think they're invincible. They're all into the job. Sometimes they forget about their true families, and they think, I'll be in this forever. I'll never come off the truck. And then you either get some sort of life altering, whether it's health or some sort of accident. So my question to you is, what advice can you give to the individual who sometimes may not think that life can happen?
Well, it's something. So let's see. So just before COVID, I went for my annual physical and my numbers were starting to climb, and the doctor said we can wait a year. And I said, okay, we'll wait. I know how that number works. But then we missed physicals during COVID. So it was 2 years. And after that, I went back and my numbers were going up significantly. She said, we can wait. I said, no, I don't want to wait. Let's get it done. So I want to, you asked a lot in that last question. So let me, I got to tell you, I was never scared, and I'm not some tough guy. I've been expecting something for the last couple of years. Something's got to happen. Okay. Even as the worst firefighter, I mean, I've been a chief since 82, so I've been in command role since then. So even standing outside in most cases, right, you get that absorption. So I always kind of waited, is it going to be hard or is it going to be cancer? So I wasn't shocked. I was never scared. I did not think I was going to die. Again, I'm just telling you my story. I looked at it as if, okay, we've sized it up. Let's go get it and let's move on. I called all my kids at the same time one night to let them know about this. And I waited right up until about a week before the surgery. I didn't, she, my wife and I decided we're not going to worry the kids. They got young families, they got stuff to do. They all had the reactions I would predict for each individual child. When the doctor told me I had cancer, it wasn't, oh my God. It was, well, all right. I kind of figured. I mean, I wasn't clicking my heels, but what do we do about it? And the big thing was to make sure it hadn't left my prostate. And it was literally doing this, trying to get out. I was within blank time of it getting out and being very ugly. My Gleason score was, so you hear people with cancer, they say, what's your stage? Well, your stage is where your cancer is right now. My stage was stage one. So you go, oh, that's not bad. But my Gleason score is how fast is it moving? 10 is a death sentence, 0 is perfect. And I was a 9.5. So that was like, oh, it's moving pretty quick. I did get a second opinion. I reached out to a firefighter who worked with me, and I've been friends with him my entire life, who is now a doctor at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And he ran my numbers through their folks, and they said, you're doing exactly what you need to do. We agree with your physician. I had full trust in the doctor, and I'm one of the lucky ones. But I got physicals every year. I got checked every year. You can't just pretend it's going to go away. I would tell you I'm more nervous now about something coming back or some other kind of diagnosis because of going through that experience. And I'm older now, right? And I mean, I'm also mentoring a number of firefighters today as we speak in dealing with cancer, and their stories are much scarier than mine. And mine's a pretty scary story. I mean, I got one guy, he is going to die and he knows it. And it's just, Jesus, what are we talking about today, right? So, my advice is you got to get checked. It's not going to go away. Don't be an idiot. You know, how many times you convince somebody to go to the hospital because they fell? Oh, if you were my mom, you'd go, well, then go to the hospital. I don't want to deal with cancer. And I don't want them to stick their finger up my ass. And I don't want to, would you stop? This is life-saving shit, man, right? And I do encourage people to get both the males to get just not only the blood test, but the digital test when they go up and check your prostate. Otherwise, you're doing a half-ass size up and you're not doing a proper overhaul to make sure you get it all, right? To see what's going on there. Find a doctor you enjoy being with. Bedside manner is a big deal. This is a very emotional time, right? So, and I went to the Cincinnati Urology Group. They have 30-something doctors, 300, 400 staffers, really good. If you live in a rural area, do not go to your local hospital. Go to a place that's the nearest metro city. Your doctor may be the most wonderful person in the world, but if I'm trapped, I want FDNY Rescue 2 coming to get me. In other words, they do it more than anybody else, right? So I want it if you have that opportunity, right? So, and I use that just as a silly example. What I mean, of course, is because there's plenty of firefighters and companies that are as good as anybody else anywhere, right? Your doctor in your rural community sees 100 cancer cases a year. And the doctor in the city sees 500 cases a year. You want that experience. Okay, nothing against rural doctors.
Right.
So it wasn't scary. More people are afraid to ask me about it. It's so funny. So how are you? I'm fine. I'm good. I'm good. And I've talked about it. I've done presentations. I do it most every time I speak. I talk about it. I talk about everything from the side effects that the prostate is basically like a valve in your system, and when you lose your prostate, and I had the surgery, you have a choice of radiation or the surgery, because in most cases both are the same exact outcome numbers. So they'll let you decide. You do your own research, that kind of stuff, because the doctor won't tell you what to do in most cases. I chose the surgery. I wanted it out. I didn't want, if radiation failed, I didn't want more surgery after that. So that was my choice. And I know guys who've gone either way. Okay. But then you are incontinent for a while. You're going to wear, it depends. I will tell you, I never pissed like out of control, but there's a dribble here, there's a dribble there. And then after a couple months, you learn to control yourself. Through Kegel exercises, right? The tightening up. Then I wore a little pad in the front. Now I don't, need anything. I'm fine. I know when I have to go to the bathroom. The difference is, if I have to go to the bathroom while we were talking, I'd say, "Excuse me, I'll be back in a minute." Where in the old days, I'd hold it in. I don't miss a bathroom these days. So I went before you and I spoke. Sexual function is great, but it's different. And they have different ways to help you with that. But the prostate is a critical part of your sexual function. But I was at the beach with my grandkids last week. That's the answer. You see what I'm saying? That
Gotcha. I gotcha.
I was at a good fire the week before with my troops doing what we do. So if I piss a little bit, or it takes me a little longer to do this or do that, it's a gift. And that's what I need people to understand. And I understand it's very personal. A lot of people will not talk as freely as I do, and I understand that. But you have an obligation to not be selfish. You have an obligation to look at the people whose pictures are in your wallet, who's counting on you to be home, this fall and Thanksgiving. Whose table do you go to? They want you to be there. So you may say, "I don't want to get touched by the doctor. I don't want to have this check." Stop the bullshit, okay? You've taken greater risks for the public, but yet you're not going to do this so your kids and grandkids can see you, because you're going to rot away from cancer. So that's kind of the logic I use, but I was never scared. I didn't lose sleep over it. I was concerned, but I really had a good level of confidence that we're going to deal with it. And if they came out and said we didn't get it all, I'd say, "All right, well, what do we do next?" And that's how I am.
Right.
So we're a little different. But I do want to put a shout out to the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. There should be not a firefighter in North America dealing with cancer that's not connected with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. It costs you nothing. And we will connect you with a firefighter who you won't know in most cases, who has dealt with the same cancer you're dealing with now. It's awesome. So.
And you do have a minus the secret list and firefighter close calls. You also do have, I think it's firefighter 40 plus or
40
something.
plus fire.
40 plus
40
fire.
plus fire. It's a website just dedicated to, it's a website just dedicated to, prostate cancer. Sorry for the distraction. You shouldn't be surprised. I've got a CAD screen in my home office so I can see what's going on.
Ah,
But I'm
nice. Into the job, Chief.
into it, man. I'm
Into
into
the
it.
job. Chief,
So, yeah.
I just have to tell you, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very
Of
much for coming
course.
on Talking Shop. I am a subscriber to the Secret List. I definitely find value in all the information being sent out from NIOSH reports to the latest and greatest of what's going on, breaking news alerts. I just want to say thank you for being you. I appreciate the mentors that you've had that have formulated the man that you are today, and very much speaking about cancer, because I have never had it, but I watched my mom go through it. Unfortunately, she passed away. But it is eye-opening when I'm watching my mom and then I'm watching a little child walking in that has to do radiation, and I'm sitting there healthy, and it's a gut feeling and it's a reality check. Like, you need to count your blessings.
Well, you not only count your blessings, but then you, whatever, let's say you're a lieutenant or you're a captain, whatever, take that and do something with that, right? make sure your troops are getting checked. Make sure they're not walking around with shit on their face. I mean, we had a fire the other day, and he came out with soot all over. So how do you have soot on your face? What are
Right.
we doing? What happened here? And look, I've been to a lot of. I'm a typical suburban firefighter. I've been as many fires as any typical suburban firefighter. Not urban, not metro, suburban, and. I love going to fires. I love stretching a line. I love doing a search. I love pulling ceilings. But you can do it without getting all that shit on you. You can do it without breathing that stuff. And you know what? One day you're saying, "Oh wow, I didn't do this, I didn't do that," and you go piss and you're pissing blood, and now your whole life changes. So you want to minimize that. And somebody said recently, "Well, I'm gonna get cancer anyway." Are you an idiot? I mean, that's not how it works. You're not going to get it. You can push this way off. And you know, again, if you're so worried about taking care of the public, and that's great, well, then you're of no use if you're rotting away from cancer, and you're certainly no use to your family. So,
That's a fact. That's a fact. Chief, like I said, thank you for coming on Talking Shop.
absolute
Truly, I
pleasure.
have appreciated the conversation and the gems and nuggets that you're throwing along the way, sir.
Thanks, Danny, and thanks for what you're doing with this program. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.